It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service, in the center of our lives, let us make room for life's quieter sides. You may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us join in an attitude of prayer. We spend so much time looking for magic in the wrong places. Then we think it must be a hard thing to get, this magic. And we go through the motions of all the incantations, prayers, lucky charms, and tricks we can find, trying to trick some magic into entering our lives. This is the season when we will be charged a lot of money for seeking magic in the wrong places. And no matter how much we spend, the credit cards aren't likely to deliver the kind of magic for which we really yearn. It's the season when we chase after the spirit called holy and wish we could be caught by it. It's an important chase, but we don't need to bring our credit cards. For the spirit of life and love and everything really worth the chase, not only is that spirit free, but it is also inside of us, waiting to be awakened and noticed so that it might work its magic. This season, let us conspire with the Holy Spirit to transform our hearts from stone to flesh, to reawaken our gratitude for this miracle of life, and our love for those who help feather our heart's nest. There's a glow and a warmth that comes from looking for magic in the right places, and it can't be begged, borrowed, stolen, or bought. But it can be brought forth from its home in the manger of our hearts, and it can bless us. That blessing, that warmth, that connection, that feeling, that's the only magic that's really worth seeking. These holidays, let us seek for the magic of the season, but let us seek for it in all the right places. Amen. It's the season to think about magic, and I started thinking about it in earnest about a week ago in a conversation with a colleague who is doing an interim ministry at a very unhappy church. She said, "I'm writing the Christmas services, but I don't feel the magic." I was reading a book at the time on magic, a book called Not in Kansas Anymore, a book that the author sent me, thinking that I might like to read it. So the price was right, and the book is good. She used to be a religion writer for the Dallas Morning News, and she brings a lot of skepticism to the subject of magic. Maybe. But she spent a couple years looking for magic among people sort of on the fringes of religion or society who make a point of looking for it. And she spent time with some extremely colorful people during this time. Witches, vampires, werewolves, and elves, and a host of others in all the costumes you could imagine and some you don't want to. And what she brought to it, luckily, was not only her skepticism, but her openness to acknowledge the experiences that she was having, which she found to be quite transformative, no matter what they were called. Now, this wasn't magic about party tricks. It wasn't about producing a quarter from behind somebody's ear. It's what the people that she spent time with called high magic, the magic of transformation, of personal transformation. This kind of magic is a search for a power of life by people who are missing it and want it. It's the effort to create a feeling that we're somehow connected to larger powers and that we can call on them and count on them to help. Of the groups she studied, the one I was most interested in, though not the one I was most attracted to, was the group of psychic vampires, because I've known a few. They told her that they could drain energy from others just by being around them. You've known a few. Yeah. And she said that sometimes after spending time with them, she felt drained and cold when they left. These psychic vampires were my favorite group because they were so stark. They divided the world into two camps, and they were very clear about it. Their question would be, are you a vampire or a victim? That's all there are, vampires or victims. Those who steal life and those from whom they steal it. It's quite a model. While all these alternative magic seekers are usually people for whom regular religion isn't working, though for some it does, you don't need religion to explain where psychic vampires might get that view of the world as a contest between those who take and those from whom they take. They could just be reading books on our economy, which is to serve the strongest at the expense of the weakest in a zero-sum game. Or they could see it in our imperialism, which acts on the notion that since we have the military might, we have the right to invade and rob any country with assets or strategic location we desire, with no more feeling for the innocent lives lost than vampires have for their victims. Vampires and victims. Those with brute power, feeding on the life energy of those whose powers are more vulnerable, more easily stolen from them. It's about trying to take or steal or even buy something from others that can give us a kind of life feeling we don't have. The whole notion's wrong, that we could really steal it or buy it. But once you buy the notion that we can buy it, look at the trap you've just slipped into. Now you're just a hair's breadth away from the bonanza realized by very clever advertisers who have convinced you that they have what you need to buy to feel the magic of the season. So I've been thinking about the Christmas season in terms of magic this week, though perhaps some odd kinds of magic. As some of you have heard, it's the same week in which a lot of large Christian megachurches have decided to cancel the Christmas services on Sunday, December 25th, this year. That tiresome crank, Jerry Falwell, has been attacking them just as he's denounced the White House for sending out holiday greeting cards because he seems to insist that Christmas is just a Christian holiday. It's not a Christian holiday at all. Even the New York Times op-ed page is writing on it now that it's been a winter solstice festival since prehistory. And all of the symbols, all of the signs, and all of our actions at Christmas show that in ways so loud you'd think they'd be screaming. In the ancient calendar, the day we call December 25th was the winter solstice. By definition, it was the birth date of all solar deities. Solar deities are born the day the sun starts coming back, the day the days start getting longer. It was the birthday of Mithras, who was the favored Roman solar deity,
and the model for most of Christianity. Many Christians even don't know that December 25th was not seen as Jesus' birthday at all. He didn't have a birthday until the 4th century, when Constantine, who was really a Mithraic ruler, imposed some compromises on Christianity as he gave them protection from the state. Two of the compromises were that they would accept the birth date of Mithras, the Roman solar deity, on December 25th as the birthday of their god, and that they would accept the holy day of Mithraism, and you can guess what day is holy for a sun god, and that's the time that Sunday became the holy day of Christianity. So it's not a Christian holiday. It really isn't even a religious holiday. It's a secular holiday. It's a merchant's holiday. It's the day merchants close their stores after the feeding frenzy of the previous 4 weeks. The merchants who will do more than a third of their annual business during this season, season at which we're expected to spend between $700 and $1,000 apiece on Christmas presents. That's over $200,000 sitting right here in this room. But it's a secular holiday. If you doubt it, look at the gifts we're buying. Do you know that Bibles constitute an infinitesimal percent of Christmas presents? What we buy has nothing to do with religion. But what we're really trying to buy, beneath the wrapping, I think, is magic. The magic of the season. And how odd that we're told we have to buy it, or that someone could sell it. Here at church, I've been getting spammed, as you probably have too, with emails from all over telling me where the magic is this year and helping to lead me to it, telling me what the hot toys are for the season. This has been fascinating reading. It's been surprising that the different manufacturers don't seem to agree on what the hot toys are. I've read that the season's hottest toy is the Microsoft Xbox 360, selling for $399. Microsoft has said they expect to sell 3 million of them. That's hot. But there's so many hot toys of the year, it's hard to know where to look for the magic. One email tells me that the hottest toy is really the remote control hovercraft. And just as my mouth is trying to figure out how to water over a remote control hovercraft, another email says, no, it's the remote control UFO that's the hottest toy of the year. And I try to work up some excitement for that, but there's so many others that are coming. There's the Twinkle Twirl Dance Studio with Twinkle Twirl Pony and accessories. That's hot. And then there's the Ninja Turtles Sewer Lair playset, which is really a lot more than I wanted to know about that. Or there's the Barbie Swan Lake Unicorn with Princess Barbie and Prince Ken, or Prince Barbie and Princess Ken. They seem sort of interchangeable. That one doesn't do a lot for me, but I'll bet some of you have daughters who hope they'll be getting one. Then there's even the Room Moods 6-inch rotating disco ball light for $14.99. God, I hope those aren't coming back. The magic of the Christmas season apparently is for sale in stores, through catalogs, and online, delivered to your door by UPS or FedEx, to transform your Christmas into the magical sort of thing you've been told you think you want. These gifts are promising to make your holiday season connect you with those larger powers that you don't know how to get in touch with. It seems to be the power of being really cool, excited, keeping up with or staying ahead of your friends. But you know, you can't buy just any sewer lair playset. Most of them don't have any magic at all. Only the Ninja Turtles sewer lair playset has the magic. It's true. And you can't go down to the dollar store and buy some scruffy old unicorn. It won't work. It won't have the magic of the Barbie Swan Lake unicorn with Princess Barbie and Prince Ken. If you don't believe it, ask your kids. It won't work. We're not buying toys. We're buying holiday magic. And we'll spend an average of $700 to $1,000 buying it because we don't believe we have it already inside. And here I think we're operating a lot like psychic vampires. To get the power we need, we have to buy it or take it from someone else because we don't have it ourselves. You know this can't be right. Even saying it out loud sounds silly. We've been convinced that holiday magic is something we have to buy, that we don't have it and can't call it forth on our own. We have to buy it. And it's a strange kind of magic at that. Because last year's hottest toys are already ice cold. And this year's will be cold in just a few months, maybe less. It's all sizzle. Not a lot of steak. It never ends. Can real magic expire in just a year? Really? Can it be as easy as charging it on a credit card? Is that really what we're after? I know psychic vampires have to hunt continuously for new life to steal. But is that really the best we can do, or even what we ought to be after? This is where I want to bring in a very different way of looking at all this from all the holiday advertising season hype. I want to bring in a way of looking at the magic that we're after that comes from religion. It even comes from Christianity. It's what the choir sang about this morning. They sang selections from Vivaldi's Magnificat. Now, some of you will know where that word Magnificat comes from, and some of you won't. It comes from one little story in the New Testament, in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verse 46, from the Christian myth of the birth of Jesus, a story written 80 years after the man Jesus was born. We know nothing about the birth of Jesus. But in this story, Mary's friend Elizabeth tells her that her baby will be the Messiah. For centuries, Jewish women hoped, at least at some level, that their baby might be the long-awaited Messiah. And Mary's just been told in this story that her baby is the one. That's when she said the line that has launched 1,000 concerts. My soul magnifies the Lord. That's what Magnificat is about in Latin. It's that magnification. And it's what's being magnified. My soul magnifies the Lord. Mary was saying, I carry within me the magic of the highest order of the universe, the magic of God Himself placed in my womb to be born into the world. My soul magnifies the Lord. Now, this is wrapped in the language of first century myths, but you understand it. You know what they're saying in this. It's about real magic. Not bought. Not something that'll wear thin by next season or cost you 20% interest every month. It's a gift of life. It's a visitation of all that's most holy, growing right inside your body. Every mother can relate to this. Every father has stood near it. Today we get a set of plastic Barbie and Ken dolls or some sewer turtles. Well, that magnifies something too. But what's that magnify? Does it magnify the power of advertising to convince us that we want what we don't need? Is that what our souls magnify at Christmas time? The power and the glory of advertising taking advantage of our continual, predictable, profitable gullibility? Or the depth of our yearning. Mary's magic was free. And really, in Jewish teachings, all people are the sons and daughters of God. There was nothing rare about being the son of God in Jewish teachings, because God was the heavenly Father of all Jews. They were all his children. It was magic and it was free. Today we get Barbie and Ken, and we buy them because we've been taught that we don't have any magic. It isn't true unless we believe it. Think back this week on your favorite Christmas, your most magical Christmas, and see what made it or what made them so magical. Now, one of the things that'll contribute to the magic of this Christmas, and it'll be adding magic for the next couple months here, is that cardinal. She was here last year, too. She sees her reflection in the window, and she thinks it's someone she needs to drive away. We don't know how to tell her that she's wrong. I remember the magical Christmas from my childhood, some of them. I can't remember a single present that I got at any of the magical Christmases. Maybe that's just me. I remembered other things. I remember the feeling of our family being together, of being happy. I remember the wonderful smell of pine needles and of cookies and bread baking. The magic of Santa Claus, that's magic. We put out milk and cookies for Santa every Christmas Eve. Our father helped us pick the kind of cookies to set out. And he really seemed to know what Santa liked, because they were gone in the morning. Think about all that. There was really nothing Christian about that Christmas either. But it was absolutely magical. And what did our souls magnify? I think it was as simple as the joy of being together, being in a safe place where love lived and we lived and where we mingled with love and called the place home. I don't mean I didn't often hope for certain presents, but I can't remember what any of them were anymore. What about you? When you think back on your best holidays, what did your soul magnify? What spirits were you channeling? What kind of powers or gods were you serving? Even without knowing you, I'll bet they were happy ones, warm ones that cherished you and cherished those around you. I'll bet your soul magnified the power of love and gratitude, and that magnification transformed the holidays into something special you still remember all these years later. Something magical. But it was homegrown magic that accomplished the miracle, not the store-bought kind. We pay a fortune for gifts each year because we don't think we have the magic within us. It's all about what we're magnifying with our souls. Think about it. If Mary had said, "My soul magnifies the fads of the season," nobody would have written it down. If she'd said, "I rejoice that I have stolen life from God, making him my newest victim," nobody would have written it down, because she got it all wrong. You can't get it more wrong than that. Our souls are going to magnify something this season. Maybe just Microsoft's profits, the fads of the season, hot new toys that start losing their heat in weeks. We spend all the money because, like psychological vampires, we think we're missing something that we can actually buy from outside. Never ends, because it's looking for magic in all the wrong places. I hope we can magnify more important things this holiday season, like the warmth of a mutual relationship with another live human being, like learning that it isn't the love we buy or steal that saves us, it's the love we share. This is the season of infinite dreams, when we dream even of finding and magnifying things like love, life, tenderness, compassion, God, even justice. Let our souls magnify all that is truly holy and life-giving this season, by whatever name we call it forth. Let our souls even aspire to magnify the holy, the sacred God, all the gods. It's still the only true and lasting miracle worth bothering with in this season or any season. Merry Christmas.